Welcome back to the Oblivious Maximus podcast. I'm your host, Ben Searle. I'm here with my co-host, as always, Aaron Osborne. How are you today, Aaron?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
No worries, mate. I'm glad you took the invite up from me to be on the podcast you did for ages before me. Let's just rip right into it. Today, we got Lachlan Watt here. G'day, Lachlan.
Glad to be back on the pod.
Yeah.
Yeah. Redeem myself from that terrible one like 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
It was a long bloody time.
We did that in person for sure, right?
Yeah, it was at your old apartment.
Oh, yeah. Mm. And it would have been with that classic bad recording device, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Sorry about that.
And I think I was trying to like detox from weed after just being like a bong lord for several years straight at that point. And you could hear the cogs in my brain like struggling to turn.
That's always best when you're getting into the chuff. Like, let's get a mic in front of this cunt.
We got to get into this.
Sick. So, I mean, for people who don't know, how would people know you? Why the fuck would you be in here with us?
You do this way more regular than we do.
Yes.
You can tell.
I guess I've just been working in music for close to 20 years now.
Mm.
Been singing in bands for around about the same amount of time, probably like 18 years, I'd say, since I've sort of been properly consumed by all of this. And, I think probably my most renowned thing would be Triple J's The Racket. Been doing that for 12 years now.
That's a long stint.
You're the longest one, right?
At this point, yeah.
Yeah.
Since Howe moved over to just Double J and since Kingsmill got the flick. I'm the veteran old guy at the station, which is bizarre.
Yeah
that's who would have thought? Not the show's not good, but I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm. Also crazy that the longest standing host is the host of the probably the most abrasive show.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the least palatable show available.
Probably one of the least listened to ones.
You're just sliding through.
Yeah.
And also currently the band you're playing in, or it's your baby.
Yeah, Run.
Run.
Dope as hell.
Cheers. You guys have a listen to the new EP?
Yes.
Yep.
Predominantly what we're here to talk about. We were in the car on the way here and we had another listen to it and I just said, metalcore is back.
Is that how you feel?
I don't think metalcore ever really went away.
Okay. Yeah. But I would say it is like maybe this is just my interpretation, but it feels like a much more like focused metalcore.
It's sort of like, it's definitely more of the 2000s kind of metalcore than what's sort of the predominant sort of genty new metal styled metalcore that's big these days.
Yeah.
But I think the concept for the band was that I just really wanted to just combine everything that I loved about metal and hardcore into just one kind of unique beast, which I think works both for and against us because it doesn't really fit in anywhere. But
yeah,
I remember when the first EP came out, you saying to me, Aaron, you said, this is the most Lachlan Watt thing I've ever heard.
I think that's a good review.
Yeah, that was what I was going for.
I played a dive bomb.
Yeah, the one guest appearance on the first EP.
I did it.
Aaron Osborne chucking a dive bomb.
It's pretty funny. I think I've done that now on like 4 records. So I'm like very happy to be that.
What is your claim to fame? What other records have the dive bomb?
I don't know if it's been announced. Maybe it has. Phantoms have a record coming out. Actually, they've talked about it. Phantoms have a record coming out. I play a dive bomb on that.
Sick.
Dive bomb for hire.
Yeah. That's I'll do
good,
it.
Good gimmick to have.
Yeah.
It's one of the funny ones.
Yeah.
And Michael Beveridge, a friend of ours, commissioned me to record music for an ad.
The Dick Pill Company.
The Dick Pill Company. Played
some dive bombs over
a handful
Dick
of dive bombs on the Dick Pill ad.
Nice.
But yeah, enough about my dive bombs. The record itself sounds like, I would say, yeah, it's a much more like focused metalcore or like, to me, it sounds like a real, like very consistent across all the songs, I would say.
Yeah, cheers. We got Aaron Parker Richards playing guitar for the band these days. He wrote the majority of the songs. Lewis wrote one of them, but collectively we all sort of spent months doing pre-pro and different demos and just reworking the tracks. And
how was it putting together the newest incarnation of the lineup?
It was actually quite smooth, really. I was like, when sort of the first lineup or the first collaboration sort of fell apart, I wasn't really sure what was going to happen from there. And then we had Dom and Will from Terminal Sleep in the band for a while. And then my second brain surgery popped up and I had to kind of like put the band on ice for a bit. And then Terminal Sleep. So obviously doing a lot. And when I came back to like when that second brain surgery was more of a false alarm situation and wanted to get the band going again pretty soon after that, they were like, sorry, we want to focus on Terminal. Like,
yeah.
Completely fair enough. That was always going to happen at some point. And so from there, our drummer Adrian kind of saved the band with his old random bandmates from back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
So Aaron was in Death in Bloom with him and this other band, Seventh Circle. And our bass player, Ben, played or sang in Adrian's first band from like high school days, Gotham City Heart Attack.
Yeah, wow.
Oh, fuck. I've seen them a bunch.
Like one of the big freezer bands, apparently.
Yeah.
Cohen was in them. Yeah. Saw him at Eltham Library once. It was pretty dope.
Eltham Library.
Yeah. Big sort of, I guess freezer kind of event. Mm. Pretty chill place for them. Like,
for a gig.
Push back the books.
Yep. Yeah, but it seems like the lineup is like pretty locked in terms of like how you're going with shows and recording and all that.
Stuff. Trying to sort of treat it as more of an actual band,
democratic
kind of situation these days, as opposed to like, I guess it started as more of a studio kind of thing. Mm. And the intention always was to take it to the stage, but kind of figured that it would probably just be like two sort of parallel lines running with the studio side of things and then like a different live incarnation of it. But, it's worked out as like an actual band these days, I suppose, but I'm still sort of, in the director's seat with it all.
And you, I guess that tour with Amity recently, like, was that kind of the biggest thing you've done in a little while?
Yeah, for me personally, definitely. Probably the biggest tour I've done in Australia in terms of the size of the shows with one of my own projects before.
Yeah.
Not counting like bands I've filled in for or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
The shows
were all sick.
And I mean, like, do you think, like, were you playing songs off this on those shows?
Yeah, we were playing two of them.
Yeah. Sick. And what was the response like?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
And like, we started playing Spring, from the first day to the tour, and it came out a couple of weeks into it, but that song's got, like, a circle pit part. And
yeah, dope.
We're getting it going every night, first band of the night. Like, we need to spin this fucking room. Like, and the Amity fan base is like, yep, sure. We can do that for you. It's pretty mad. Then Autumn, one of the other singles that we started playing on that tour, like, it's just, I think the way that song is structured, it's got a really easily followable sort of flow, and you could just kind of see everyone bopping their heads to it and just knowing what when the next heavy part was kind of coming. And
yeah,
it was really, really rewarding.
Yeah. Well, that was what I was going to say. Like the riffs and the song structure and sort of the songs themselves on this record, feel very like focused to me. And I think like in that setting, where people maybe are not as like exploratory with their listening habits, like it's very good to be very like direct. I mean, I think that was like, it's a very different thing, but like the experience I had with like, I exist touring with Frenzel Rom, like whenever we would play like the stoner rock bluesy songs, motherfuckers were loving it. And then as soon as we play like a crusty song, no one gave a shit.
This new stuff's definitely a little bit more aligned with metalcore than the first EP, which I think is still very much metalcore, like a lot more black metal on the first one, and not as many breakdowns. Like, we purposely structured that first EP to only like have one real proper like big typical chugga breakdown as like the climax in the middle of it all. But Aaron he really loves metalcore a lot more than previous collaborators. So
yeah, sure.
Well, it definitely felt just like
natural that happened, and it's a lot more fun.
Yeah,
not breakdowns.
Like, not derivative, but like it sounded like familiar. Like, and I think that's like a cool thing to like go like, this is its own thing, but sounds reminiscent of that 2000 stuff. Yeah.
Well, I think the other thing too right now is that there has really been like a resurgence of a lot of different things that were like, I guess, hugely popular, I suppose, when all of us were kind of like coming up. Like that stuff's like really come back into fashion, which is quite surprising to me.
I saw some kid on Twitter or something once, I think, talking about how Dying Wish was one of the most important bands in hardcore, and I'm just like, God damn it. Like,
yeah,
I'm so old. Like, have you never heard of Killswitch Engage?
Yeah.
Or Parkway Drive's Killing with a Smile?
Yeah.
Or like Unearth? Like,
well, that Dying Wish, like, it's cool. I like it.
It's really sick, but
yeah.
It's interesting to be on the other end of a trend coming back
in
fashion now and going like, oh, this is...
We were there the first time.
And yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's being praised as revolutionary.
Yeah.
Well, that was always, I think, the funny thing for me too, where I feel like death metal comes back like every 5 years. Mm. Like every 5 years, death metal is the biggest thing around, and then it like hits the skids real hard and it's got to work back up through other scenes. And like, I feel like when I was a kid first getting into it, it was like the biggest thing in the world, and then it vanished, and then it like slowly came back up through... I kind of threw like metalcore and stuff like that. That's where it came back in again through
well, became deathcore and it
came
through that.
Exactly.
And now it's coming up through just
through
like
hardcore more bands and stuff.
Traditional styled hardcore, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like,
a flat circle.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got a lot of hardcore dudes playing death metal now as well, which seems to be like the more popular side of it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, 100%. And I mean, like, it's just really funny. Like I remember. Like Kevin Cameron wearing Nile shirts in Prom Queen promo photos was like, that was like, oh, death metal's back. Like, this skinny guy likes death metal. Like,
I remember when I was 16 buying the same Misery Signals shirt that he was wearing in one of their promo photos and just thinking, oh, I was the coolest cunt.
So all the way from buying Misery Signals shirts to now this record, bunch of cool guests on the record too.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the guests who you got going on?
You thought I
got
to up Aaron Osborne on the first one. Let's even get a few more in.
Get one better than me.
Yeah, I suppose before I get into that, I should maybe just let people know it's called True Heaviness is Time. It's just a six-track EP.
Mm.
Very much a conceptual kind of thing with big themes in the art and the layers and all sort of coming together to form one sort of big piece, just like the first one. But yeah. We got Joel Birch on one of the tracks from Amity.
Yeah.
He just like pretty much said yes. He said yes straight away before he even heard it because he liked the first one.
Yeah.
A lot. And yeah, that was sick.
The song with him rips. And that was one of the ones you were playing live, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sick. Yeah, that's killer. I mean, the video for that's cool too. Having a laugh recording.
Yeah,
that's
sick. Just dudes being silly.
Yeah.
Playing some instruments. And
yeah.
Some nice shots of some birds flying around and some bees and the sun and the moon outside, just like...
That's what you need.
Vibing.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we got actually Sophie from Rub is on one of the other tracks.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool, probably the most unique...
Yeah, it's sick.
...guest spot on there.
Yeah, yeah, it's really cool.
And then the one that by the time this is out will have just been released, John Floriani from Trophy Eyes.
Yeah.
And that, having to sing.
And that's like real, like, that song's real proper chorus.
Yeah, it's like the only singy chorus. Like, there's a few little spots of
and
melodic
And are you singing
vocal.
On it too? Doing
yeah,
a bit
yeah.
of yeah. Yeah, sick.
So I basically had written a chorus for that song, but
okay.
I wasn't 100% stoked on where all the notes were. Like, I was like, this is missing something. Like,
yeah,
this chorus is kind of here, but I feel like... It hasn't really hit the home run, and I hit John up to see if he could sort of help me fix the chorus a little bit. And from that idea, it was like, you want to just help sing it? And so it's his first metal appearance.
Yeah, that's wild. And
it kind of just sounds like Thrice to me. It's like John Floriani singing over like our sort of post-metalcore kind of sound, like... Sounds like those later post-metal-y Thrice records.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's real catchy. Like, I mean, the thing is, like, I would say that's like a signifier of metalcore broadly is like when there is clean singing, it really jams a hook into you.
Mm.
And like, that's fucking rad to have on, again, particularly when it's coming from, I think really the what I'm trying to get to is that like, this sounds like a real progression in terms of like, the first thing was the Lachlan Watt concept.
Yeah.
Then it gets a little bit, it starts growing up a little bit. And then you've landed here where it's like, all right, the lineup's kind of settled. your concept is kind of dialed in now.
Yeah.
Like that's what it feels like to me now.
Yeah. I think like runners kind of just like, because I've already got this concept in a concept in mind for an album mm-hmm. that we're hopefully going to do next. And it just kind of, I feel like it's just the same, going to be the same thing each mm-hmm. time, but just expanded, broader horizons and hopefully better.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the recording process like for this one?
We did this one all ourselves.
Yeah.
It was Lewis, friend of the pod.
Who I recorded with literally days ago.
Yeah, he's a great engineer.
Yeah.
So, and Adrian, our drummer, doesn't do it so much these days, but also used to record bands.
Yeah, sure. Mm.
So, yeah, we just hired a nice studio for the drums and tracked them there and then did everything else at Lewis's house and my house. And,
yeah, cool.
And sent it off to Forrester Savelle in Perth, who does like Carnival and Dead Letter Circus and all those kind of bands to make it sound really lush.
How did you switch on with getting him to mix it? Was that just something you like the sounds of the records he's done?
I'm trying to remember how I realized he would be a good option. Mm. I think he started doing a few random metalcore bands from Australia here or there.
Right.
I think thinking about it, I was kind of like, who in Australia is there that could kind of get this lush sort of sound, this natural but really clean, pretty sort of sparkly sort of mix that I'm envisioning? And I think I thought about Carnival's Sound Awake and was like, that sort of mix would sound fucking sick for this, and hit him up, and his price was pretty decent, like a little bit cheaper than sort of the American equivalents that like, because we did the first one with Will Putney and it sounded great, but I actually like the Forrester mix a bit more. It sounds a lot more natural.
Yeah, I think it suits what you're trying to go for too.
How have you been going, I guess, managing putting this together and putting it out with everything else? Because you're also, you know, booking tours yourself, doing the radio.
I guess run comes has to come second to all of that.
Yeah.
And but now that the band is a little bit more of a democracy, I can get like a little bit more help with a few bits and pieces, like Aaron and Adrian. Well, Aaron sort of likes to do it as a bit of a hobby with the video editing stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's what Adrian does professionally now. So, we were the video clip for Spring, like we like shot all that ourselves and then just paid Pat Carney from Post Heaven to just like edit it together.
Great. Yeah, sick.
And then the video for Summer with John, we just kind of got Pat to come in and just take the reins with that. But the two video clips we did for the singles in between the EPs, that was just all a completely in-house job, which is super cool.
Yeah, that's rad.
But and like having a publicist, hiring a publicist to help with this EP as opposed to just trying to do it all myself is taking a bit of the weight off. But yeah, it's a lot to kind of keep up with and all the bills of the band and doing it on that level. Because I just make things hard for myself too by having to do things like these certain ways and have these like multi-layered art concepts and stuff and getting Pat to design, you know, six different pieces
for but it he that loves come it, together. Though.
And it's awesome, but I definitely could make it easier for myself if I wanted to. But
I think it sets you apart. Like I think the art definitely with the music, it's like, I don't know, you can tell that by seeing what it looks like, I will be into the rest of it.
Mm.
I think that's like if you didn't know the band, that's what you'd feel from it. Cause I think it really makes a difference, cause it's always disappointing when you see a band put something out with like very basic art and you're like, you guys didn't really care much about that. Yeah. So.
Well, I think the other thing too is like getting people who care as well. Mm. Like Patty cares.
Yeah. Working with him is so, so satisfying. I love it. I can't imagine doing the band with anyone else doing our imagery.
Yeah. I mean, he's literally, I reckon there's like multiple things I can see in this that he's designed. So, I remember when he was doing the art for the first thing, he was like just so all in on it because he was like excited about doing it. And like, I think that also really helps too, is like when you would have had the same experience and, like, you know, going through so many years of doing this, you can often do things with people who are doing it for a job or doing it for because they're your friend. Like, there's a lot of reasons why they do it. But when you find people who actually want to do it and want to participate in it, it always makes the outcome like so much more satisfying.
Yeah, like the first one, we sort of, him and I just sat down together in a cafe around the corner from here actually once, and just, I had this sort of idea and we just sat there and fleshed it out together, and he really just helped that concept kind of blossom.
Mm.
And then with this new one, I just like sent him this like 800 word email or something, just like a wall of dot points and all the different layers and things I wanted in there. And I think at first, like, he said he was a bit like, ooh.
Yeah.
And then, but then once he read it all, he's like, this makes sense. I get it. Yeah. And it all came back looking even sicker than I had pictured it.
Yeah.
It was a lot more, I guess I saw it in my head as a lot more of a 2D kind of looking thing. And
yeah, right.
He's used all this cool 3D modeling stuff. And because originally with, like, because the artwork's like a sundial, a flat earth sundial kind of thing, just like floating in the middle of space. And I had this concept of splitting it up into the seasons, and that perhaps the artwork for each of the seasons would be just like a sort of maybe like a pizza slice of the environment, because it's like, it's the mountain from the first EP that's in the middle
of the
sundial. Gotcha. So it's like, you know, I was talking about, it's just kind of getting bigger, the same concept expanding. And then Pat just comes up with the idea of like, what if instead of like that slice of land sort of concept, it's just like just a view from each season's point on the sundial.
Yeah. Ah.
Gotcha. See that,
I guess that's why he gets the big bucks.
He does, yeah. And I guess if it's something that you're pushing mostly yourself, when you've get to those parts where you can hand it over to someone else who can like dissect your ideas into maybe more than what you thought it could be, that's important to find people like that. And it sounds like that's happened within the band as well.
Yeah, it has for sure. Aaron, like, he's, as I said, he's really into metalcore.
Mm.
He'd never really heard of Deaf Heaven before, which is one of them.
Yeah, the big influences.
I'm sure he'd heard of them, but he hadn't really listened to it.
Mm.
And I think he's sort of not into all the more weirder stuff that I am, or the more post-metal-y stuff, or the black metal side of things. But I think he, being sort of handed this kind of template of a sound that I think, in the scheme of things, is fairly unique, given his sort of existing sort of skill set, sort of just gave him a fresh palette of things to play with that he'd never really done before. And it kind of unlocked something creatively in him, and the songs started pouring out. And as far as I know, they're still kind of pouring out. He's got like 4 or 5 demos for the record that are sounding sick. Yeah. So hopefully after we do a bunch of shows this year, I kind of just, unless like sick offers come through, we'll just see what happens. But I would kind of like, think I'd prefer to sort of put more of the focus and energy and money into just doing a full length as opposed to touring the hell out of this shit.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing too is like, when you get a role going, at least for me, I feel like it's kind of important to strike, particularly creatively, like, because sometimes it's hard to get it back too. Mm. Like, and I mean, I think that's the biggest problem that I've always had. And it's what I'm doing right now with the stuff that I'm doing, is that like, because I'm so like fired up about doing it, I got to keep going. And like, you know, people even said to me like, oh, you know, oh, you just did this Aglo thing recently. I'm like, well, I didn't do it that recently for me. For me, it was fucking ages ago, but I really like doing it and people are responding to it, so I should keep going with it, you know, like I want to do it. So
it's kind of frustrating, like, because I think a lot of van conversations over the course of the Amity tour and sitting in the van listening to these demos that he's been doing and just talking about where it goes from here and fleshing out the concept for the album.
Mm.
And then you get to the end of 5 weeks of touring, everyone's broke and burnt out and sick of each other. And it's time to focus on putting these songs that we've just bought. I just poured everything into, like, out instead of just diving into new stuff. So we'll see if we can sort of get that momentum back, but that's hopefully the plan after we just do some more shows for this.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the beauty of like bringing in someone else to do the publicity and stuff like that, is you can just sort of hand it off a little bit just to keep it rolling. Because I feel like momentum is the hardest thing to maintain, because once you're on a roll, like that's easy to go.
You can easily get derailed.
Mm.
How do you feel with, like, kind of back to what Sella was saying before, like, how do you feel with working all these other sides of it then translating that to you doing the other end of it yourself, like in terms of like booking tours and doing, you know, literally interviewing people and all that sort of shit? How does it feel for you then doing the other side of it? Is it kind of like a workplace burden, or do you feel like invigorated by doing the other side of it?
You mean like doing the
like the
business side of things for the band?
Well, no, it even like, well, yes, kind of that, but even more like, you know, like for a literal living, you talk to people about the records that they have done and tours that are coming up, and then you book tours yourself for other people's bands. Then when it's time to like do the job for yourself, is it a punish or no, is it like
it's way more fun. Like I love what I do for work, but I never like set out to become a radio host or like a tour booker or like a venue guy or any of the stuff that I've done over the years or a label dude. Like it was just, I just got involved and started going to gigs, and I think I sort of first got involved in the sort of live entertainment sort of booking side of things, just because geeks from Ishua back in the day, we all lived in Brisbane, and he and some other guys had started this metal club, Club Phoenix, and he's like, we need someone to book the Thursday night hardcore shows. Hey Lachlan, I think you'd be really good at this. What do you think about that? And it was like, okay, sure. And I just started doing it.
That's my job now.
And the music journalism, I suppose, side of things just happened. Just because I was genuinely curious. I wanted to ask these questions. I wanted to know what made bands and all the creatives and stuff that I looked up to like actually tick, and how they made their music. And the best way to actually get in the position to be asking those questions is to start writing and doing interviews for like webzines and magazines and stuff. And yeah, just the radio stuff just kind of happened accidentally. Just because the position came up, and I'd never done radio before, but I'd done a little bit of everything else and kind of knew all the sort of main sort of contacts and knowledge base that you'd need to do that. And I think maybe I'm a natural speaker. I had a lot of experience like on the debating team in high school and stuff, but I'd never done any radio. And again, a bunch of friends were like, because I saw that, you know, Hoag was moving on and that the job was being advertised. And I thought to myself, like, yeah, about time, like,
yeah,
the show needs some freshening up.
Truly.
And a bunch of people were like, hey, have you considered applying for this? Like, you'd be great at that. And I was like, I actually hadn't, but maybe I should.
It's funny that other people presenting that to you, because you'd never think of it for yourself. But
yeah.
It's just like all of this stuff has just happened by accident because I started playing in a band, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So getting to kind of come back and talk about my band and do my band, like, do all the work for my band. It's sick.
Yeah,
it's kind of what got me started in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just very interesting because it's very different for different people. Like some people hate this part of it or the sort of business side of it. I'm probably kind of similar to yourself in that, like, you know, not that it's music, but like my job for the last, you know, 15 years has been like organizing stuff. Like that's what I do for work. So for me, like, you know, friends duck my partner, like a lot of people are like, why do you keep doing this thing that's annoying? And I'm like, because I'm good at it, like, and I guess even though it's annoying, I like doing it.
Yeah, and like, you kind of like, we've all come too far. I remember someone telling me once, if you're still doing this, like if you don't get out of doing this shit by the time you're 30, you're going to be doing it forever.
Yeah,
and that seems to be the truth for a lot of people.
Yeah, big time.
And I guess sometimes, you know, all my jobs can kind of wear me down or like get frustrating, and you get kind of bitter about the fact that like you're having to deal with like spreadsheets and budgets and emails and shit, and just for like something that you used to just truly love without any of that shit being attached to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, regularly enough, you have these like beautiful moments and just like amazing experiences and great connections and things that can't be sort of found anywhere else that just remind you why you do this in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the other thing too, for me, that's always been like the thing that draws me back regardless of all the things that are shit about it or punishing or whatever, is that like at the end of the day, like I've made so many friends because of this, and like the friendships and the like the relationship stuff. I mean, obviously there's another side of that that's been a lot of annoying stuff with that too. But at the same time, like I would have nowhere near as many friends as I have had I not done all this other stuff. And I continue to have really interesting conversations with people and interactions with people and experiences as a result of like this dumb metal thing.
Yeah. You know? And, like, and, you know, we've gotten to see a vast sort of slice of the world through these experiences, which is really unique and just an incredible privilege to have. And most people don't get that.
No.
And it seems like you quite recently had a moment of like real professional satisfaction with the recent tour. I'm going to fuck up the name here.
Try it.
Sansusa Bog.
Sanguisuga Bog.
Yeah. Like the tour, the show at the Hi-Fi seemed like it.
Yeah, that ripped. Was, I think that was the biggest biggest club show I've ever booked. It was very, very satisfying.
It was sick as hell.
I knew that tour would do well, but I didn't think it would do that well. And this health tour as well, it's just been announced. Like the Melbourne show, by the time this airs, will have been upgraded because it's like a few tickets away from selling out.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, wow.
It's like, that's my first time like booking like 170 Russell, like sick. And now it's going to Northcote Theatre.
Yeah, wow.
Like, awesome.
That's great.
Feels massive.
Feels very good to have those milestones.
I know next to nothing about health. Excuse my ignorance.
They're very, very sick.
They are everywhere.
Mm.
Like I'm seeing like comedians I follow on Instagram doing interviews with them and stuff. Like
on the GTA soundtrack.
Oh, true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think they did the soundtrack to Max Payne.
Oh, right.
And that was sort of their gateway into the gaming sort of side of things. And they've done songs for Cyberpunk.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think they've just... Because they started off as like a noise rock kind of arty band. Their first kind of hit was a collaboration with Crystal Castles.
Oh, yeah, wow, okay.
They guessed it on a Crystal Castles song. But I think they were always like heavy music guys growing up.
Sure.
And just sort of started to gravitate back towards that world. And then the like lockdowns and COVID happened and they started doing all these different collaborations.
Yeah.
And that just really blew them up.
Mm. I had seen them years and years ago when I was in the States and I met this random dude at a hostel or something and took me to see them in like 2009. And I kind of hadn't really super stayed in touch with them, but like in the recent years. And then recently listening, I was like, fuck, this band rules. Like it's so fucking good.
It's so sick and so unique.
Like that Deftones Be Quiet and Drive cover is so fucking good. Like for the Spotify sessions, it's like, okay, these are my guys.
I got to get into this now
Yeah.
I've just been blank on it. I've been listening to the same bullshit for too long. I mean, I think the other thing too that show was fucking awesome. Like the Sanguisuga Bog one was fucking killer. But I mean, it's great as well with the kind of popularity resurgence of stuff right now, the post-COVID thing, people coming back out and seeing things.
It's really hit or miss, I think. Yeah. Tours either seem to just go skits or just kind of like limp along.
But I think it's important to have people like yourself who kind of exist across kind of a plethora of spaces as well, where it tends to get bottlenecked and sometimes go poorly is when people who are so focused on like
the one subgenre that they love.
Yeah. Or like old world shit. Like I only want to bring back the same fucking four bands that have already been here like five times. Like, yes, maybe that's a kind of guarantee, but I kind of often feel like it isn't a guarantee in Australia because a lot of times people are like, I saw them a year ago, so why would I care again? But it's really refreshing when like, you know, bands like that. And I mean, even the stuff that I know, you know, you had a hand in with things with Dark Mofo in the past, like that stuff was really refreshing to have like, all right, newer shit come into that rather than just the same old whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
well, it seems like people are, you know, just this week, Splendor in the Grass was canceled very quickly.
Yeah. Insanely so quickly.
Yeah.
It seems like
sales were that dismal.
Yeah.
Like it seems like cost of living is obviously having an effect. So like you said,
I think something, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you
off.
No,
go for it.
I was just going to say something that's kind of like, you know, I see all the commentary about cost of living stuff. Like one of the factors that I think sort of seems to get a little bit glossed over is just how much the cost of living actually affects promoters as well, because it's just become so much more expensive to bring bands out here and to get their flights and their hotels and their petrols for their vans and just all that stuff. It's just like you can't, if something's like not selling that great and there's millions of dollars on the line, it's pretty difficult to limp along and hope for the best and hope that enough people will save up enough money in time to be able to commit to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other thing too is just, I guess, kind of reading what you're putting into things as well. Like, I have no care or whatever towards a thing like Splendor in the Grass, obviously. But, I mean, like, the reality is that clearly whatever intention was there for it was not received as well as it should have been.
Mm.
So maybe that will allow the promoters to then go back and reflect on what they'd put into it and go, all right, maybe it isn't Kylie Minogue headlining this thing. Like, you know.
It's definitely a multifaceted issue. And I think we need a bit of a perhaps reset.
Mm.
Well, it seemed like,
I don't know if that's obviously we can't reset. That's a nice fantasy.
Yeah.
Well, it seemed like after COVID, maybe there was a bit more money around government funding. They were able to really like put a lot into these festivals.
Mm.
And now it's kind of the other side of it, of like, well, we can only afford X amount of massive acts.
Yeah. And all the international agents for all these big bands and big artists are just demanding so much more money now because all of their costs have gone through the roof as well. And it's so much easier for them to just keep doing laps around North America and Europe.
Yeah.
Big time.
Without as much, you know, overheads and without having to do like a 16, 17 hour flight to come down to Australia and play four shows or whatever.
Mm.
And I think that's where always like the, you know, and this is, you know, I've probably talked about this a lot of times before, but I feel like really where a lot of the legwork for bigger stuff comes from is actually from the middle, where the middle bands are the ones sucking it up and just doing it, or the middle bands are the ones that are coming to Australia because they just want to come to Australia.
Yeah.
Like they'll eat a bad tour if they get to hold a koala and go to the fucking beach or whatever, you know? Like,
and I think I would like to sort of see the industry perhaps return to that a little bit more, just like bands like coming to Australia as like a privilege.
Yeah.
I think we've spoiled touring artists in this country for a very long time. Like as you know, as someone who has toured Europe and is familiar with how things work in America, it's very much like, here's your guarantee. Here's the show date. Our job's done.
Yeah.
But when bands come to Australia, it's like, all right, we got your visa.
Yeah.
We got all your internal flights, your tour manager, your sound guy, like everything's covered. You don't have to worry about shit. It's like the red carpet gets rolled out.
Yeah.
And just like, I think the whole Soundwave era of festivals and touring just really like pushed expectations sort of through the roof. And I'm hoping that what's happening at the moment will help bring it back down to earth a little bit more. And
it's like not sustainable.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Well, and
we're kind of be able to treat coming to Australia for tours as more of a privilege that, you know, if you get like a subsidized holiday to come and have this experience, like sick, as opposed to we got to go to Australia and make like tens of thousands of dollars to play half a dozen shows.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think the other thing too that a lot of those, you know, a lot of those people don't realize as well is that, like, you know, yes, you can do laps of the same people in North America as many times as you want because the population is 400 million people. Mm. There's 30 million people in this country. And in the five major cities that you're probably going to go to, there's, you know, half of that is in those places.
I think Dave Haley said something to me once about his struggle to like make international booking agents realize like that, you know, coming to Australia is like touring California.
Yeah, 100%. Well, and I mean, I think the other thing too is like, you look at doing like if you do like a Europe run circuit, thing. Yeah, that's a nice sound, isn't it? Yeah, that's the vid.
Happy Death Day, Jesus.
Yeah, sorry, we're doing this on Good Friday.
Yeah,
bought these beers yesterday when the shops are open. No, but like doing those Europe runs where it's like, I mean, like literally the one that I did was it was like Germany, France, France, Germany, Germany, Belgium, Germany. Holland, Germany, Slovakia, Germany. Like it was just, you could, and every show was a different city with a different, completely different scene, different people. That's not here. Like you don't have that here. Mm. You got maybe if you could stretch it to like eight shows and that's pushing pretty hard.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Well, I definitely see it like Melbourne Comedy Festival just started and, you know, a lot of people are, you know, most people are not even aware that it has started yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And some people are struggling with tickets and stuff like that. And it's like, well, music's this big, comedy's this big, and then the shit you do is tiny.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to find those people. I
know this Gate Creeper tour happening in the next couple of weeks.
This will probably come out while that's on.
Yeah.
But like 10 shows.
Mm. Yeah, that's wild.
In hindsight, maybe a little too many. Maybe maybe I've spread it too thin. Like, who knows how, like, ticket sales these days are kind of like limp along a little bit, and then you get like a big rush at the finish line. So maybe and it's not going terribly, but it's just not what I would have expected that lineup to do.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I have overestimated the capacity to just actually be able to go and do your Wollongongs and Canberras and Newcastle's as well as Sydney, as opposed to just like just doing those spots and getting everyone from those satellite cities or whatever to just come into the big smoke for the night.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing too is like it's always really hard in those, you know, which is interesting given the last like, you know, big tour that you did was a straight up regional tour. It's obviously very different when it's a band that is revered wherever. But coming from a regional place, like a regional hub for that sort of stuff, it's even like, you know, again, this will come out by the time it happens, but like this Suffocation show in Canberra, like every person I know is going because it's like the first time an international band has been booked in Canberra on a Saturday.
Mm.
And they're like, can't believe that it's not on a Wednesday. Like, they're like, holy shit, it's going to be the best show ever because it's on the weekend. Like, but also you can't forego Melbourne on a Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Well, it seems like Adelaide is getting more Saturday night shows because I guess the crowds there don't seem to go out.
They don't come out on weeknights.
Yeah.
If they come out at all.
Yeah.
I've started like dropping Adelaide from certain tours just because it's just like the more arty sort of stuff. Like I think I gave them a Friday night for Greg Puciato and it just flopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, damn.
I mean, I think the other thing too is it really, it kind of, the place can be so fickle with it as well. Mm. I mean, there was a time, obviously, and you're fortunate enough, it was just like right time, right place for me. But like, that's how all my stuff got the gas behind it, was because at the time there was people in Canberra and there was people going all these things. So you could have, you know, whoever come play Internal Affairs or whatever come play on a Thursday at a youth center and it'd sell out. Like, so that was sick. But then I think then like a couple of years later, people would try and do the same thing and there'd be like three people there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was like, all right, well, Canberra's dead. Don't book any shows there forever. And then it takes like 5 years of, but I mean, part of that is obviously people growing up and moving on and this, that, and the other. Yeah. But I mean, that being said, you know, the last show that I played in Canberra, his show was good. And like bulk of the people there were the same fucking people who've been going the whole time.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of kids. And it's like, cool that kids are coming now too. Hopefully they hang around for the 2 years after they turn 18 and then it can actually do well for touring bands and stuff like that. But, you know, it's never going to be easy.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at like the age demographics of heavy music. I think, perhaps hardcore doesn't have this problem as much as metal, but I think even like, cause just through work at like with Triple J Unearthed, we can see like the stats of like the ages of people that are signing up with profiles for their bands for like this genre or that genre. Mm. And I think the younger generation is perhaps not as into these subcultures as it was when we were coming up. I don't know. I think
it's harder to discover. I think like I feel like it's more, I guess, whatever's popular through social media, or there's less mixing with that. Like, I guess it's funny. Our friend Matt's younger daughter has since got into like discovered the Deftones through TikTok, which was like, oh wow, I didn't think anyone under 35 knew about the Deftones.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think, it's obviously very, you know, few and far between when those things pop off too. Mm. Like you're relying on like a wave of a trend for it to come back around. But I mean, I think the other thing too with, I mean, hardcore in particular is a different example in that like it is driven by the youth. So like if they're not available or around, then it's going to hit a lull. I think it's a little bit different with metal, where there's a lot of people consistently stay into that for a lot longer and commit to it forever.
Less movement.
Less movement, for sure. But also that less movement can also be a negative in that, like, the stuff that I was talking about before, where, like, you got the same promoter bringing the same fucking band back four times because they don't want to take a shot with someone young.
Something new. You know? I've always liked to say that I think, like, in the relationship between hardcore and metal, hardcore keeps metal on its toes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I think the thing, too, with, I guess, you know, you and I are probably, like, very distinct examples of it in that, like, we have interacted with both for, like, the length of time that we've been doing this has been interacting with both of them pretty distinctly. And also, like, pretty openly, like, not giving a fuck that people want to align us with either one. Like, I know that this is what I like and I know that this is what I do and that's fine. Like, I don't care. It's, it doesn't need to be, you know, segmented from one another. I still think, I mean, again, I've probably talked about it before, but I still think one of, like, the funniest defining moments for me with that was, like, I remember the first time I went to a friend of mine's house wearing a white t-shirt. That was a hardcore band shirt. I got given so much shit for wearing a white
t-shirt. Shocking.
Like, given shit for wearing a white t-shirt. Like,
you poser.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta wear the uniform, brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we're all wearing black shirts now, so, so who's laughing now?
Yeah, he wins. He's probably a public servant now, but whatever.
I'm a public
servant. You're a public servant, actually. Yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't talk shit. Sorry, the ABC. All right. Well, what else? What else has Run got in the can? What's the
What's the plan?
We're
EP. Then what?
So we're going to release all of the. Well, we got one more season to release at once. Now that summer is out, by the time this is aired.
Yep.
Winter with Sophie.
Yep.
Will be out after that, and then at some point after that, the sixth track. Cause it's like bookended by like a finale track and an intro track.
Yep.
That'll be out sometime in the very near future. And in May, we are going on tour with Svalbard from the UK. Yeah, cool. Just doing Perth, Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne. Should be fun. And we're going to Adelaide in August to play like a death metal festival, basically. Sick. Well, it's like it's kind of like mostly deathcore and death metal bands. And then we have a few other things that haven't been announced yet. I'm not sure if they'll be announced by the time this is out or not, so I'll just keep a lid on it. But yeah, we'll we were going to roll the dice as well on trying to do a Melbourne headline show, and to see how that goes as like a little launch. And so we'll just have like a scattered, I suppose, EP sort of launch tour, which will be one show will be sort of us seeing if we can bring our own crowd or not at this point, and the rest will be playing like festivals or with other bands' crowds.
Yeah, cool.
And nothing planned beyond August at this point. As I was saying before, I'd like to sort of get back to writing.
Yeah, dope.
And any plans for more chooks?
Yeah, I've got like four baby chooks. Another one hatched today.
Nice.
Got four of them sitting under the mum at home in like the spare room right now.
What's the egg yield like at the moment? Pretty hectic or?
It was pretty hectic and I sort of, for a while, and I just kind of made it one of my things to just give people eggs.
Yeah,
give
all my mates eggs. I received some.
But that was sort of a lockdown sort of project of mine. And then over Christmas, when we were away, a fox got into the pen for the first time in a few years and just slaughtered half of them.
Damn.
So we went from like 26, 28 chickens or something like that down to I think like 10 or 12.
Yeah. Damn.
And so the egg yield hasn't been great lately, but They've also been hiding them in the pen somewhere, and I've been like, it's been driving me fucking insane trying to find the eggs. I've paced the whole pen like half a dozen times, like because I put all this like old carpet and rugs and shit in there that I find on the side of the road to help with the erosion because they kick up all the dirt, and I'm looking under all of it trying to find where the hell all the eggs are on the other. I'm like, where the fuck are you cunts putting all the eggs? I'm only getting like two or three a day at this point, and I'm like, I need to eat more than that.
Guys, you got to get these eggs up.
And, you're paying rent out here.
And I found like a pile of like all these identical little eggs the other day. It was like probably like 12 of them. They were all just so fucking rotten. Like some of them just exploded on like touch. That's how rotten they were.
Oh my God.
Gross. It was fucked. But there's like a bunch of, because they're all different sort of breeds of chook.
Mm.
So there's like, they all have distinct eggs. And yeah. I know that there's a bunch that are just missing from like the regular collections. And I still, it's driving me absolutely fucking bananas. I can't find the eggs. And I've been looking almost every day for the last few weeks. Like, where are you guys hiding the eggs?
That's great. Mm. I love that this is a little like home project for you to find all these missing eggs.
I grew up with chickens in the backyard and always loved them. I sort of just would just go and hang out with the chooks.
Yeah.
Have a fight with my dad and go out and hang with the chooks. Chill out with them.
Now it's a full-time job just trying to find the eggs. Where can everyone follow or find Run on the internet?
Run_metal on most social platforms. Runmetal.bandcamp.com.
Dope.
Kind of wish that I'd chosen a more search engine optimized friendly band name, but I'm glad it's at least one word now, because originally when it was like spaced out because we started this project and the name kind of tied in to the tracks of the first EP, because that's sort of, it all just kind of came together like that, and I was like, fuck, that's the band name and that's each song. And then realized, well, was informed that there was a hardcore band from Frankston that had just started with the same name. And I was like, all right, well, you guys can keep that. I'm just going to put spaces in between it so we're different. And then eventually they changed their name. And then it kind of became a full band with everyone that's in it now. And with the release of the new EP, it was like, let's get rid of the spaces. Like, it's like Run has kind of moved in and become whole or something. It was kind of a nice coincidence with that, but it's still like a very common word, and there's still like quite a few other artists out there on Spotify called Run, so it can be difficult to find us sometimes.
I was absolutely devastated when Aglo, which is literally my initials, put it on the internet. Someone already had it, and I was like, you fuckers, someone else put this up.
So you just went with it anyway?
I'm just all caps, and then that's why everything is Aglo Brutal. Because I was like,
Well, I got Serlo_, and the guy that has @Serlo on Twitter is like a bit of a fucking creep. I'm like, fucking hell.
Painted yourself into a corner.
Calling this cunt out.
Yeah, you can find me on just like, I pretty much put everything that I do on Instagram at Lachlan Watt with an O, and having the O in my name has helped that.
Yeah.
I guess it's a more unique spelling.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day getting myspace.com/Lachlan and just thinking, I'm like, this is sick. I'm set for life. I've got like got my internet destination sorted forever.
You're done.
You're done.
You got anything you want to spruik, Serlo?
Just Catfish Comedy every Tuesday. Come down to that. I think by the time we put this out, Comedy Fest will be done. But, well, sort of near the end, but we've got big lineups and stuff probably post as well. Seeing who else is around and rolling into the year, which will be sick. That's about it. Serlo.net. Haven't updated it for a bit, but jump on there.
Jump on the site. Aglo playing May 11. Extortion playing May 10. By the time this comes up, Mental Cavity, Old Band, Back Baby, playing with Suffocation and Revocation, all the cations.
Mental Cavocation.
Mental Cavocation, playing with them in Canberra. Come to that.
Is Mental Cavity going to do a new record?
Yeah, we'll have to. We got to. They're jamming all the time now. They're a band again.
Sick.
I'm just going to sing now.
Lachlan, you can't switch off. You're fucking asking him questions.
I'm just genuinely curious.
It's never gone away.
Mental Cavity's back. I'm a singer now. Very important for me.
No axe.
That'd be great. Thank you very much for coming, Lachlan.
Thank you for having me. That was fun.
Thanks, mate.
Brutal.
Cheers.
Cheers.